Thanks to Kipper, Greg, Tony, and all hip 78sters. And now it's time to shift over to a different vibe here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city, as we sit together in this evening under lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, inviting you to attend and respond to by email to rla@momentsunderlamplight.com. You may recall that on the last show, on the theme of exchange, I mentioned that we didn't have time to cover all aspects of exchange, in particular that most common kind of exchange of money. And so I thought I'd pick up on that this evening under lamplight. And we'll include here, as I mentioned last time, a visit to Dante's Inferno, to the usurers, or moneylenders, found at a very pivotal place in hell. First, let's listen to a succession of songs about money, to remind us of the way money can be an exchange passed on from one to another. Let's return to the Loving Spoonful, whom we enjoyed last time, and this time hear their song, Money. Watch the way each step of this money game involves some sort of exchange of services or of enjoyment or of further money in return.
I get money from you to tickle your whim or blow up your mind. Then I give money to you and you pay me back in kind. Bills and helps me make up my mind. And I give money to Bill, and he will be on my side. Now I gave money to Joe, 'cause Bill said he knows he'll pay me back in time.
Sound, isn't it? The Lovin' Spoonful had their roots in jug band music, and there we had a typical jug band banjo, but then also a typewriter rhythm section. Of course, the whole point of a jug band is that they picked up whatever makeshift instruments were at hand, like a jug to blow into, and here's the old-fashioned non-electric typewriter. You've heard typewriter keys clicking before, haven't you? Or, Bubby, maybe you're just a wee bit too young for that. Well, you have that sound here, anyway. On the other hand, sometimes money is passed around, but it's not actually an exchange. People take your money and pass it round and round, leaving you with nothing in the end. And that's what notoriously happened to the Kinks, who began their career naively being ripped off with some bad contracts. And here's Ray Davis' response to the music industry that capitalizes on the music without even the exchange of enjoying the music or even listening to it. The song's called Money Go Round from the 1970 album Lola versus Power Man and the Money Go Round Part 1. There never was a Part 2. This Money Go Round is an insidious version of a merry-go-round, and the music here brings us the raucous excitement of the circus fairground, interspersed with, I think, a series of melodrama chord sequences. It's the only way to keep going in a world out to screw you. Ready?
Robert owes half to Granville, who in turn gave half to Larry, who adored my instrumental.
foreign publisher, he took half the money that was earned in some far distant land, gave back half to Larry, and I end up with half of goodness knows what. Can't somebody explain why things go on this way? I thought they were my friends. I can't believe it's me. I can't believe that I'm supreme. Eyes down, round and round, let's all sit much of money go. Served on the verge of a nervous breakdown, I decided to fight back to the end. But if I ever get my money, I'll be too old and gray to spend it all. Life goes on and on, but no one ever wins. Time goes quickly by, just like the money go round. I only hope that I'll survive.
I thought they were my friends. I can't believe it's me. I can't believe that I'm so green. You see, it's not the loss of money that bothers him the most, but the humiliation of expecting an exchange and getting nothing. A few years later, the Kinks gave us another song about money, more threatening, also more melodramatic. Money Talks is from the rock opera Preservation Part 2, sung by Flash, the ex-spiv whose money has brought him unlimited power. Money talks, and we're the living proof. No one can resist the pull of money. There's no man alive who wouldn't sell for a price. Money here is not so much a means of exchange as a tool or instrument, a pretty blunt instrument, for getting what you want from someone else. Money talks you out of your self-respect. The more you crave it, the cheaper you get. That was 1970. Aren't we glad we now live in a society where money has lost its power to get what it wants? We start with honky-tonk piano, eerie guitar, and then get hit with harder sounds. This is the hardness of someone like Flash, so sure of his power and the power of money, so uncaring about everyone and everything else.
Without
That was a Kinks double bill, Money Go Round and Money Talks. And why not another double bill this time from Randy Newman, a fine songwriter who, after Toy Story, became seriously rich. My sense is that he was happy to enjoy all the privileges this wealth brought him, but his keen eye for the stupid superficialities of life made him very uncomfortable with the money, too. Anyway, he's written two songs specifically about the love of money, spoken in the voice we hear so often from him, the self-centered asshole or schmuck, or whatever loathsome label we want to apply. I keep telling myself that it is only a fictional voice, not the real Randy Newman, but then I begin to wonder. But that's all right. One of the great things about Randy Newman songs is that they leave us uncomfortable, a little restless, laughing but then catching ourselves, and finally, perhaps, a little more sensitive to the insensitivity lurking within others and within ourselves. First, let's have It's Money That I Love from the 1979 album Born Again. Born again? Certainly not the speaker here. I'll give you the lines so you can listen more attentively. It starts off with a catalogue of what he doesn't love. He's been blind to all the good things money can't buy. I don't love the mountains, and I don't love the sea, and I don't love Jesus, he never done a thing for me. And then we get a hint that some of this might stem from his family, who make him feel ugly, stupid, and wicked. I ain't pretty like my sister, or smart like my dad, or good like my mama. It's money that I love. It's money that I love. They say that money can't buy love in this world, but it'll get you a half pound of cocaine and a 16-year-old girl. In the original album in the late 70s, he says 16-year-old girl, but when he redid the song with just piano accompaniment, the version we'll hear in a minute, in 2003, he must have felt that this was too outrageous even for a Randy Newman song, and also, perhaps, illegal. So he changed her to a 19-year-old girl, not quite as outrageous, but I suppose we have to make concessions. It'll get you half a pound of cocaine and a 16-year-old girl and a great big long limousine on a hot September night. Now that might not be love, but it's all right. Well, yes, it's all right if you've been bought by money so thoroughly that you limit your vision to only the self-pleasing and the very temporary pleasures of indulging your ego desires. And as John Ruskin said, the rich man cannot sit down at his feast unless he sits down blindfolded. So it is here. Used to worry about the poor, but I don't worry anymore. Used to worry about the black man, now I don't worry about the black man. Used to worry about the starving children of India. You know what I say now about the starving children of India? I say, oh mama, it's the money I love.
For me, ain't pretty like my sister, small like my dad, good like my mama. It's money that I love. It's money that I love. They say that money can't buy love in this world. A half pound of cocaine, 19-year-old girl, big long limousine on hot September night. Now that may not be love, but it's all right. Used to worry
outraged by that? Okay, next, from It's Money That I Love to It's the Money That Matters, from the 1988 album Land of Dreams. This is more, well, philosophical. The speaker is not the rich schmuck who vaunts about his love of money. Instead, it's a thoughtful person, maybe even Randy Newman himself, wondering about the inequalities of the world, something all of us thoughtful, sensitive people wonder about. He has his eyes open to those without money who deserve to have more, people who have refused to participate in the frantic money-go-round of the Vanity Fair world. Of all the people that I used to know, most never adjusted to the great big world. I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio, or for community radio, perhaps, carrying their babies around in a sack on their back, moving careful and slow. All these caring, laid-back hippie types, dropouts from the capitalist world. And then the chorus, with its final identification of the song as a comment specifically on the American way of things. But of course, the idolization of money is not by any means exclusively American. It's money that matters, hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA. All of these people are much brighter than I. In any fair system, they would flourish and thrive. But they barely survive. They eke out a living and they barely survive. When I was a young boy, maybe 13, I took a hard look around me and asked, what does it mean? So I talked to my father and he didn't know. And I talked to my friend and he didn't know. And I talked to my brother and he didn't know. And I talked to everybody that I knew. Then I talked to a man up on the county line. And here comes the voice of the schmuck from the previous song. Now Randy Newman puts this view into the mouth of an explicitly loathsome character. I was washing his car with a friend of mine. He was a little fat guy in a red jumpsuit. I said, you look kind of funny. He said, I know that I do. But I got a great big house on the hill here, and a great big blonde wife inside it, and a great big pool in my backyard, and another great big pool beside it. This is one of those wonderful Randy Newman lines that go quite over the top. This guy is bitten by that desire to parade his wealth. It's not enough to have a great big pool in my backyard. He has to have another great big pool beside it. Of absolutely no use at all, but that's the point, isn't it? Sonny, it's money that matters, hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA. It's money that matters, now you know that it's true. It's money that matters, whatever you do. I suppose if you're caught in that money-go-round, all you can do is go round and round, spending and spending on things you don't need, and round, telling yourself and others that, of course, it's money that matters.
They eke
lived up on the county line. I was washing his car with a friend of mine. Great big pool in my backyard. Another great big pool beside it. Sunday is money that matters. Hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA. It's money that matters. Now you know that it's true.
That's Randy Newman. It's The Money That Matters. And this is Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, looking at money exchanges. I promised you a visit with Dante in the Inferno. And there's a clear link from Randy Newman's song to Dante's usurers or moneylenders. Even though that rich bastard in the song thinks that money's the most important thing, at least he gets something in exchange for his money. He's exchanged his money for that great big house on the hill here, and a great big blonde wife inside it, and a great big pool in my backyard, and another great big pool beside it. The builder of the house and the pool, and the second pool, the fashionable decorator who did up the rooms inside, the estate agent who sold him the property, and so on, all these people received the man's money in exchange for what they offered, even if what they offered merely stroked the man's vanity. At least others made an income out of this, or as Alexander Pope put it, speaking about another vain profligate, "Not a vanity is given in vain." But for usurers, this is a hard word for a Philadelphian to pronounce, we would say usurers. Usurers. But I can't say that on the radio. Usurers. But for usurers, it's better to do more Scottish, usurers. For usurers, it really is the money that matters. They do not use the money as a means of exchange, but as a commodity that they buy and sell to make more money from. They will lend you money as opposed to giving you money, but what you give in exchange is not your services or some goods to be used. You give back more money. In other words, you are exchanging money for money. Put like this, we can see that it is absurdly cyclical, just as it becomes for many people, alas, who need to keep borrowing money. They borrow money and can't pay it back, so borrow yet more money to pay the interest, and more money to help pay interest on that loan, and so on, round and round on this absurd cycle. Though it's more than absurd, it's evil. It ruins people and destroys community. And that's why Dante gives those who perpetrate this activity their own special place in hell. In the middle section of hell, in Dante's wonderful scheme, is assigned to those who have sinned through violence. First, there are those who have been violent against other people, condemned to stand in a river of boiling blood. Some, petty thugs perhaps, stand only ankle deep. Others, maybe long-time wife-beaters, stand deeper, maybe knee-deep. Further along are those who have committed violence against many people, a serial killer perhaps, and then Rambo, and then Genghis Khan or Attila the Hun or Hitler in so deep that we see only the top of their heads, or perhaps not even that much of them. We have here not only those who use physical violence, but also bullies, senders of hate mail, those people who post simplistic slogans on Facebook inciting hatred for, well, for whatever group they feel threatens them. Many preachers, safe for the moment in their pulpits, are metaphorically burning in this boiling river of blood. The blood they've shed or incited others to shed turns around and burns them instead. All right, it's time for a pause, using music to give us a moment to reflect. Here's Dylan's License to Kill, the awful way that they sanction violence and killing. But there's always that woman sitting on the hill asking who's going to take away the license to kill. We'll have Maria Moldauer's powerful cover of this song, with its spooky opening, taking us down deeper into hell.
Man thinks, 'cause he rules the earth, he can do with it as he please. And if things don't change soon, he will. Oh, man has invented his doom. The first step was touching the moon. Now there's a woman on my block. She just sits there as night grows still. She said, who's gonna take away his license to kill? Now they take him and they teach him, and they groom him for life, and they set him on a path where he's bound to get ill. Then they bury him with stars, sell his body like they do used cars. Now there's a woman on my block. She just sits there facing the hill. She said, who's gonna take away his license to kill? Now he's hell-bent for destruction. He's afraid and confused, and his brain has been mismanaged with great skill. All he believes are his eyes, and his eyes, they just tell him lies. But there's a woman on my block. She just sits there in a cold, cold chill. She say, who's gonna take away his license to kill? Leaving no stone unturned. Maybe an actor in a plot that might be all that you got. Till your error you have clearly learned. Now he worships at an altar of a stagnant pool. And when he sees his reflection, he's fulfilled. Fair play. He wants it all and he wants it his way. Now there's a woman on my block. She just sits there as night grows still. She says, who's gonna take away his license to kill? Gonna take away his license to kill. Who's gonna take away his license to kill? Oh, who's gonna take away his license to kill?
Then come those who have been violent against themselves. Here are the suicides whose souls become dead, twisted trees. A whole silent forest of dead trees. They chose to stop up their own movements on earth, and now the souls are confined to trees, standing motionless and silent, until Dante breaks off a twig on one of the trees, and the flowing blood bubbles out in the self-pitying voice of a suicide. Also among the violent against themselves are those who have ruined their property. The guy who set fire to his house just for the fun of seeing it burn. The celebrity who blows his fortune in riotous living and ruins himself. This, Dante would say, was being violent against the man's self. And these profligates rush around the wood of suicides, chased by mad dogs who catch them and rip their bodies into small pieces. Right? One of the colorful moments in Dante's Inferno. Oops. Sorry, there's another little song waiting here to be heard. A very early Dylan piece called I Hate to Be You on That Dreadful Day.
Well, your clock is gonna stop at St. Peter's Gate. You're gonna ask him what time it is. He's gonna say it's too late. Hey, hey. I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. You're gonna start to sweat and you ain't gonna stop. You're gonna have a nightmare and never wake up. Hey, 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 I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. You're gonna cry for pills. Your head's gonna be in a knot, but the pills are gonna cost more than what you've got. Hey, hey, I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. You're gonna have to walk naked, you can't ride in no car. You're gonna let everybody see just what you are. Hey, hey, I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. Well, the good wine's a-flowing 4 or 5 cents a quart. You're gonna look in your money bags and find your 1 cent short. Hey, 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 I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. You're gonna yell and scream, don't anybody care. You're gonna hear out a voice say, should've listened when you heard them words down there. Hey, hey, I'd sure hate to be you on that dreadful day. That's my Calypso tap number.
Well, that Calypso number came from the Whitmark demos from the early 60s. But finally, in this region of the Inferno given over to the violent souls, finally come those who are violent against God, inhabiting a sterile desert where burning flames of fire descend like snow upon burning sands. There are 3 kinds of violent souls here. First are those who have challenged or blasphemed God, such as Capaneus from Greek mythology, who was scaling the walls of Thebes and boasted that even Jupiter himself could not stop him. Jupiter did, of course, stop him with a thunderbolt straight from the heavens. Unlike everyone else, whose hands are busy trying to brush away the burning flames, Capaneus now stretches himself out on the ground, defying the burning sand and the falling flames, refusing to give God any satisfaction. You think you're hurting me with all this fire? Ha, you wish, man. And we can picture him giving God the finger as he says this. More problematic are those who are violent against the works of God. Here we find the sodomites, gay men in small groups, dancing endlessly and pointlessly in circles together. There are, of course, cultural reasons why a Catholic and an Italian poet of the 14th century would have little sympathy for gay men, but let's not go into that now. The allegorical point here is that sodomy is a form of sex that is sterile. God created sexuality to be fruitful, and these people use their sexual urges and equipment in a way that will never produce more. I suppose in another place, Dante might have placed those using birth control, violent against the human body God made. We find this pretty hard to take sympathetically, don't we? But so much the better. Let us exercise our imaginations even harder in order to try to understand the reasonings of a world older and different from our own. We don't condemn, we try to understand. More amenable to our views today would be those who are violent against God's works by destroying the environment. Man thinks 'cause he rules the world, he can do with it as he please. These people who determine to cut down the rainforest, for instance, would find themselves appropriately here in this burning desert, nothing to shelter them from the burning from above, no water or greenery to offset the burning from the ground. Dante's Inferno is a myth, a fictional depiction of certain conditions of the human soul, but we today are turning it into a reality. Did you just turn your heat up 3 degrees instead of putting on another layer of clothing? Did you drive into London when you could have taken the train? You are metaphorically running around in that sterile desert. Turn back, O man, forswear thy foolish ways. And then the third group of those violent against God, the usurers, remember them? Usury is violence against God because it offende la divina bontade. It offends God's generosity. Let Dorothy Sayers explain it for us. Dante's thought in this passage, which is that of the medieval church, is of such urgent relevance today, she wrote that in 1949, that it is worthwhile to disentangle it from his, to us, rather odd and unfamiliar phraseology. What Dante is saying is that there are only two sources of real wealth, nature and art, or as we should put it, natural resources and the labor of man. The buying and selling of money as though it were a commodity creates only a spurious wealth and results in injury to the earth, nature, and the exploitation of labor, art. The attitude to men and things which this implies is a kind of blasphemy. Since art derives from nature, as nature derives from God, so that contempt of them is contempt of him. Get it? No, you don't. Of course not. But it's okay to get it, only partially. There's no exam, after all. But it's time to look at Dante's actual encounter with these usurers. Dante and Virgil have crossed the burning sands and come to the edge of a huge cliff which separates the circles of violence from the much worse circles of fraud below. Virgil summons a monster from out of the deep darkness below, who will carry the two of them on his back down, down to these lower regions. This is Gerione, or Geryon, a three-part monster with the face of the kindest, sweetest, most obliging human being, but then the body of a serpent, and worse, the long, swaying tail of a scorpion, with a lethal sting at the tip. The mythic image of this transition from violence, that stinging tail, to fraud, that false friendly face. While Virgil negotiates with Geryon, Dante walks off a little ways to look more closely at a group of figures sitting right on the edge of this cliff. These are the usurers, the moneylenders, the bankers. This is the first time since he embarked on his long journey that Dante is alone, tutto solo. Virgil has been standing for the human reason, and so here is Dante leaving reason behind to look at these figures. I think the poem is saying that usury is so obviously wrong that we don't even need our rational faculties to see it as a crime. What do these figures look like? They're sitting there, trying to bat off the falling flames like dogs in the summer, frantically swatting at flies and fleas biting them. Dante recognizes none of the faces. In fact, their faces are indistinct. They have no individual features, but are all gazing downwards at the money bags hanging from around their necks, and each bag displays the coat of arms, today we'd say the logo, of the banking family they belong to. It's as though they have sold their individuality to the company. They exist only to make money for the company, which will then pass on some of the money to them. Perhaps it's saying that the only way the usurer can carry out this activity is by hiding behind a company name, like one or two characters in Dickens, who demand payment on their loans by whining that they're only the middlemen, but their principal lender behind the scenes is the nasty one demanding the payment. Here is the fraud that lurks behind the violence, as we sit here just on the border between violence and fraud. Do we need to go further with applying this to our world? Can you recognize any individual bankers, or do they all look alike in their corporate suits, the only difference being which bank or credit company appears on their letterheads or business cards? But there is no human being here to make exchange with. Just the kind face offering you a good interest rate, but ready to sting you for your money as soon as you climb aboard. It's all about a kind of double tease, preying on fools who give away their money hoping they'll be the winners. But the banks win in the end, as we know. If you want it, here it is. Come and get it. That was Badfinger, remember them? With Paul McCartney's song, Come and Get It. A little light-hearted for this deep in hell, but there's also something comic about the usurers. Picture them, these bankers who ruled the world once, sitting there between violence and fraud, their pain erupting from their eyes, but their bodies squirming as they ineffectually try to ward off the falling flames. And yet still keep their glance fixed on the logo around their neck, the only form of identity they ever had. A fool and his money will soon be parted, McCartney reminds us. But these fools must sit forever with their money bags around their necks, tied to their false selves endlessly. How can we avoid their predicament? Well, yes, I think Walt Whitman this week does show us one way. We accept the material world and celebrate it, but do not linger there. We do not define ourselves by the material world. We know that there is a reality further, beyond, where we find our true identity. Let's hear what he says. Endless unfolding of words of ages, and mine a word of the modern, a word en masse, a word of the faith that never balks. One time as good as another time, here or henceforward, it is all the same to me. A word of reality, materialism first and last imbuing. Hurrah for positive science! Long live exact demonstration! Fetch stone crop and mix it with cedar and branches of lilac. This is a lexicographer or chemist. This made a grammar of the old cartouches. These mariners put the ship through dangerous unknown seas. This is the geologist, and this works with the scalpel, and this is a mathematician. Gentlemen, I receive you, and attach and clasp hands with you. The facts are useful and real, but they are not my dwelling. I enter by them to an area of the dwelling. I am less the reminder of property or qualities, and more the reminder of life, and go on the square for my own sake and for others' sakes, and make short account of neuters and geldings, and favor men and women fully equipped, and beat the gong of revolt, and stop with fugitives and them that plot and conspire. How often are you going to hear Walt Whitman read like this on the radio? Well, we're some of the few privileged people who can do this and get away with it, perhaps. So what's he saying? All the words of all times, here or henceforward, Plato, the Buddha, Isaiah, Aquinas, a Siberian shaman, Walt Whitman, they all have equal weight. They are all the same to me, Whitman says, because they are imbued with the word of reality. It is this reality beyond the material world that alone gives real value to the people and things we see around us. It allows us to accept everyone, the lexicographer or chemist, these mariners who put the ship through dangerous unknown seas, the geologist, the surgeon, the mathematicians. Gentlemen, Whitman proclaims, I receive you and attach and clasp hands with you. The facts are useful and real, but they are not my dwelling. I enter by them only to pass onward to an area of the dwelling. You see where he is headed, I hope. I am less the reminder of property or qualities, and more the reminder of life. Property doesn't matter. Whether you have a great big pool and another great big pool beside it doesn't matter. Money, contrary to Randy Newman's little fat guy in a red jumpsuit, doesn't matter. It is life that matters, that powerful, creative, generative joy of life. This is what Whitman celebrates. He makes short account of neuters and geldings, people who are sterile, like those burning sands in hell, people who do not exchange, but reap for themselves only. No, instead, Whitman favors men and women fully equipped, who can join him in rising up and beating the gong of revolt and stopping with fugitives and them that plot and conspire. Let's get out there and enjoy the world and be fruitful for others. There's Whitman's spirit. And here again are his words. endless unfolding of words of ages, and mine a word of the modern, a word or mass, a word of the faith that never balks, one time as good as another time, here or henceforward it is all the same to me. A word of reality, materialism first and last imbuing. Hurrah for positive science. Long live exact demonstration. Fetch stone crop and mix it with cedar and branches of lilac. This is a lexicographer or chemist. This made a grammar of the old cartouches. These mariners put the ship through dangerous unknown seas. This is the geologist, and this works with the scalpel, and this is a mathematician. Gentlemen, I receive you and attach and clasp hands with you. The facts are useful and real. They are not my dwelling. I enter by them to an area of the dwelling. I am less the reminder of property or qualities, and more the reminder of life, and go on the square for my own sake and for others' sakes, and make short account of neuters and geldings, and favor men and women fully equipped, and beat the gong of revolt, and stop with fugitives and them that plot and conspire. And how else to finish here but with this great celebration of the American dream by Afro Man? The more outrageous you find this, the closer it is to what Whitman is talking about. So good night from me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, inviting you to come back next time to attend to Evening Under Lamplight here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city. Over to you, Afro Man.
Yes, yes, thank you for inviting me here for my final speech. Ladies and gentlemen, homosexuals, lesbians, and transvestites, allow me to introduce myself as the hungry hustler Afro Man. I am the American dream. Even though the government tried to experiment with me by placing me in the projects, I'm still the American dream. Surrounded by drugs, jeopardize my life by living around thugs, but I'm still the American dream. Kicked out of Palmdale High School because I was considered a distraction to the educational process. I've traveled through the complete metamorphosis of the justice system, and I'm still the American dream. Entered juvenile hall as a tadpole, hopped out of prison as a bullfrog, but I'm still the American dream. The most rejected, disrespected. When I went for a job, I was never selected, but I am still the American dream. And right about now, I find it quite serendipitous to see that all of you sometime in wishy-washy, two-faced, backstabbing, conniving hypocrites have accumulated here in my midst to persecute my character with such flagrant slanderosity, but I counterattack by calling it constructive criticism, and all of your negativity has been recycled into motivation, and I am still the American dream. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. There's a lot of people out there that can identify with me. Young lady right here, you may be a single teenage mother, but you are still the American dream. The lady next to you, yes, your breasts may not be as big as men think they should be, but you are still the American dream. Young man, you may not be a baller, shot caller, with 20-inch blades on the Impala, but you are still the American dream. Young man right here, you may have spent all your money on a hood rat bitch and didn't get no pussy last night, but you are still the American dream. Yes, sir, I am just like Cam. I'm for the black man, the Mexican, even poor white, all human beings that have no rights. So put down your past, pick up your future, follow me as we journey through the Red Sea. Cause I done been to the mountaintop, I've seen the promised land. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the underground category. My mind has been delivered, my spirit has been reinstated from the corporate world's modern day slavery. I've been emancipated, free at last, free at last. Fuck a drug test, I'm finna roll some grass. Love, peace, and Afro grease forever. A-E-I-O-U and sometimes W. Cause I'm high, cause I'm high, cause I'm high. The views of Afro Man does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of T-Bone's Records. Motherfucker.